What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast with an awful lot to round up following a thrilling final day. Let's get straight to it then. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And that is the regular Football League season done and dusted. We've got playoffs to look forward to, but we've got plenty to reflect on from that dramatic final day. It's me, Matt. I've got Adrian Clark with me. Okay, Clarky?
Very good. Yeah, it was nice to see the sun sort of beaming down on the EFL for the final day of the season. It's the only way, isn't it, to end the regular season. But it still feels too early. Still, it's not warm enough, is it, for it to be the end of the campaign. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, bright sunshine is a requisite for the last day for sure. Sam Parkin's with us too. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good. Yeah, Matt's already had this story, but I did find it particularly balmy when I got off the train from Manchester in London on Saturday evening, and I was going to a fancy dress party dressed as a ref. So I was delighted that I had the shorts and tee. I basically was Howard Webb. It was uncanny. But when I got off a sweaty tube at Vauxhall, I didn't have much to go to link up with my other half at this said party. But I was delighted that summer was here. Bought it off Amazon. Yeah. I didn't buy a Howard Webb outfit, but as it transpired, someone did message me and said, I'm friends with Howard Webb. I'll let him know. Because obviously with my bald napper, as soon as I put the yellow on and got a red card brandishing around the party dance floor, I was very much Howard Webb-esque.
I think that's a simple but effective.
It was an R party. It was an R letter R party. And obviously I was going to be a late arrival. So I didn't go to town, as I would have done had I been in the vicinity. But for a late run, perfect. Just I'd played five-a-side, basically, on the way home. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're more Howard Webb than Anthony Taylor as well, I think.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him. He's a bit bigger, isn't he, old Webby?
Yeah. All right, before we get going, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. And while we're talking about yellow cards, we're going to issue a virtual one to Stockport County's Ollie Norwood for kicking over the Quinbet advertising hoarding as part of his celebration for scoring a penalty for the Hatters at Barnsley at the weekend. No good. Right, we'll get to League One later, but we'll start in the Championship. Where Ipswich no longer are. They beat QPR 3-0 on the final day of the season at Portman Road to secure second place and automatic promotion, and with it an automatic return to the Premier League. Sam, it was against your boyhood club, your old club, getting the job done. And they didn't have to work that hard for it. It was done and dusted inside 10 minutes.
Yeah, they started so fast, didn't they, Ipswich? And it was almost the old guard, wasn't it, of Davis marauding down the left-hand side and Wes Burns central to it as well, which was a nice touch. It looks like they've been central to the celebrations as well from what I've seen on social media. I mean, there's so much. My head is just a whirl with photos and tweets, and there's been so much, obviously, after the promotions, the relegations, the end-of-season awards and such like. So excuse me and us if we forget one or two things today. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. Davis flying down the left-hand side, Philogene and Bengay, I felt. Sorry for the first 15, 20 minutes. I love him. I've spoken about him on this podcast. Love his character. He's been a bit of a standout for Rangers this year. But yeah, wasn't his day. And had the third gone in early, it probably could have been a cricket score. QPR responded a little bit, I thought, in the second half. Paul Smith had a bit of an impact. But essentially, without Kone and Burrell and probably an undercooked Ilias Chair, where were QPR really going to hurt Ipswich? Had they got that goal? Maybe. But Ipswich's day, obviously, they went into it with the experience of doing exactly the same on two occasions during those previous promotions. They know what it was going to take. And yeah, any nerves quickly would have been put to one side with those early goals. So yeah, real credit, I think, to Kieran McKenna to get three promotions in different manner as well. This has been not as swashbuckling as previously. I think that's been, you know, well documented already. I'm not sure it's a completely new Ipswich town. I don't know if it's to do with personnel, maybe just the fact that they were the big fish in the relative small pond this season, there to be shot at. Everyone's big game. that's probably why they've struggled on the road to a degree, that teams raise their games and it can be difficult, a championship, as we know. But it's an unbelievable achievement and, yeah, fascinated to see how they go next season. Disappointed we didn't get a grandstand finish at either the race course or the Den, but Ipswich deserved their place in the Premier League and, yeah, delighted for them.
Mm. Kieran McKenna-Clark, he says the club is in a way, way better position than last time we went up. Every department is stronger. Maybe not the PR department, but yeah, other than that. What are they going to need to do then? Big surgery on the squad for them? Last time they went for kind of championship-ready players, didn't they, in terms of their recruitment? Do you think they might attract more of a kind of Premier League-ready player? Or are they going to be looking at what Sunderland and Leeds did in the market last summer?
I think they need more Premier League-ready players, more experienced players. They bought a championship all-star squad for the Premier League, wasn't good enough, went down, and they have been too good for the championship. Now, a lot of those guys are a bit older now and probably better equipped for the Premier League. So I think a few of them will revel, but they've got to change things up a bit. They only won 4 games in the top flight. They let in 82 goals. So I think defensively, they have to get some, you know, top level experience in there for me. I think that's absolutely imperative. Then they'll need a striker as well. Like, they've got good forwards, good at championship level, but you need guys that are going to be able to score in the top flight. And I'm not completely sold that they have those in place at the moment. So yeah, it's both ends of the pitch. I think you're probably looking at, aren't you, in terms of goalkeeper, centre half, and then striker. But yeah, I wish them well. Really do. You know, I love Ipswich. You know that. And yeah, it's great to see them back there. I just hope that they make a bit of a fist of it. What I will say though is that you shouldn't get a trophy for finishing second in the league. That's just stupid.
Arsenal used to get on for finishing fourth, didn't they?
Never. And QPR, what are they doing in a rugby kit? I don't understand it. You know, they got to be in red and black hoops. That's the only away kit that's acceptable for me.
And there was obviously a footage of, I think, Cambridge lifting their little their trophy. I think it was actually a plate. And Michael Morrison, friend of the pod, holding it aloft quite comically. So, yeah, I think they could maybe do away with that, couldn't they?
So they get second. Millwall miss out despite beating Oxford. Ditto Middlesbrough, who drew at Wrexham. So it's Millwall, Southampton, Middlesbrough and Hull in the playoffs. It was between Hull and Wrexham and Derby for the final playoff spot. All three of those teams had periods where they were in sixth position. It was where Wrexham had started. This was kind of where the fun was, Clarky, wasn't it? Because it kept changing hands and swapping between the various teams. You had Derby going ahead early on in their game, Wrexham coming from behind, McBurnie getting the winner that got Hull in there from what looked like an offside position. There was plenty happening in the race for sixth.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I was in the car, actually, while it was all unfolding. So, you know, they were going around the grounds and it was really, really, excuse me, good fun to listen to. But well done, Hull. I mean, they were the team that occupied that spot for the longest out of those guys. So in some ways, they did deserve it. They've been a bit reliant on McBurnie, haven't they? And it's probably fitting that he was the guy that got them over the line. I think they were lucky because, for me, he was offside for the all-important winning goal. So, you know, Penny, there was quite a few, we'll get to those, quite a few controversial decisions during the course of the day. And I think that they certainly got a little bit fortunate there. I don't see them getting promoted, if I'm honest. I think they are the weakest of the four, but they'll score, you know, they can score goals. I like the wingers, but Burnley's a great striker. But they let in 7 more goals than Oxford. Oxford went down, so, you know, how's that work? Interesting that as well, that in the regular season, they won 3-1 at the Den, Millwall won 3-1 at their place, so it could be quite a lively tie, this semi-final against Millwall, but I think Millwall's superior out-of-possession play should give them the edge, but let's see.
Had 5 live on between 12 and half 2, did you, Clarkie? I heard it was good coverage.
Oh no, I didn't have 5 live.
Oh, well, we'd agree to disagree.
Yeah. I didn't hear you, mate. I didn't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had the Wrexham Middlesbrough game on one of the screens, and that was That was great at the end because obviously Wrexham knew they just needed that goal. Middlesbrough's fate was sealed and they threw the kitchen sink and I think five centre forwards, if I counted correctly, at them. So, yeah, I enjoyed the jeopardy from that game. And yeah, Clarkie just mentioned the fixtures briefly. And I remember watching Millwall at home not so long ago and they got absolutely battered and somehow won the game 3-1. So that will be relatively fresh in the memory. Jumping ahead to that, I think Josh Coburn missed the final day victory over Oxford. He was really important on that day because they didn't have loads of the ball, Millwall, as so often they don't, but he's so forceful and so physical and there's a bit of a lack of pace for Hull defensively. So I think getting him back will be really important. And Aziz, obviously, the other one finishing the season really strong in terms of the Millwall lads. But you just have to factor in the experience, I think, of this whole team and squad that's been put together. You know, that's been meticulously, these players have been signed to give them this opportunity. And they spoke, Ollie McBurney, about a meeting on Friday prior to the game against Norwich, where, you know, I had them probably drawing maybe at best that game. I thought Norwich are the better side right now. But a meeting, I think, chaired by John Egan and Louis Coyle stirred something amongst the lads, and they found a performance in an indifferent period for them. What, 2 wins in 9 they go into these playoffs in, but that experience could count for something across these two games, and I'm not envisaging many goals. I think this will be the finest of margins.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Hull v Millwall, first leg Friday, second leg Monday, Borough v Southampton, they go Saturday, and then Tuesday. Millwall Southampton final for me, Clarkie, what do you reckon?
Probably, yeah, but if it was Hull by Borough, it wouldn't be the biggest shock. I think the two sides best equipped for Premier League football are in the other semi-final, Southampton and Middlesbrough. Mm. It would be a heck of a story if Hull or Millwall made it, I've got to say. So, yeah, wish everybody involved the best of luck. But, yeah, I was at the Riverside in January when Borough absolutely walloped Southampton. It won't be like that this second time around. I can assure you of that. It's this Saints team are much, much better now.
Yeah, Southampton have failed to score in one away game this season at Middlesbrough. And since then, they've just been relentless. 7 wins and 2 draws on the road. So in a completely different place. And conversely, I think Middlesbrough's woes have been against the bottom sides, haven't they, at home? Failed to score in 5 games against the bottom 8. Against the top teams, a lot of goals in the game. So this could be, I don't know, I think the first one could be cagey, but I think across the 4 games, across the 2 ties, sorry, you would fancy this one to have a bit more on either goal, just considering the way that both the managers like to set up. I suppose Hayden Hackney, if he's available as well, that would be a massive boost to the home side.
If anyone can beat Southampton, I think it might be Borough. I don't suppose Hackney's back, is he? I don't know what's happening.
I think he's not back training, but they're hopeful. Okay. They're hopeful, yeah.
Yeah, they've just got, with Whittaker, they've just got a little bit of a sort of catalyst guy there, haven't they? But and the football they play is great, Borough, but yeah, you have to make Saints like faves.
Yeah, but at least finishing a bit better, 4 unbeaten, having won 2 of those. Now then, in news no one saw coming, Watford have sacked Ed Still after less than 3 months in charge at Vicarage Road. Their final day hammering by Coventry, their 5th defeat in a row, means they're looking for their 15th head coach, not counting interims, since September 2019. Go for his brother, go on, just for our purposes, if nothing else. And in better news, US consortium Arise Capital Partners are the new owners of Sheffield Wednesday, led by Chairman David Stork. Hawaiian get up all over Hillsborough on Saturday, and they even won a game as well. They beat West Brom by 2-1. It got even better for them as well with the news that they will start on 0 points in League One next
season. The way they finish this season, right?
Yeah, and an easy way, right, Clarkie, to get the fans back on board immediately for the new owner by changing the badge back to the owl after Chancery had changed it. It felt like everything they did about that was right. Like that video of them ticking down the points to nor the fact it was a party atmosphere. I mean, boy, if ever a football club needed a bit of good news this season, it's them. So they can bounce their way back down to League One rather than it looking like another grind and just trying to stay in that division.
100%. Yeah, no, it's a bit sort of the best news story, you know, for a long time in terms of the EFL and for supporters of that club. So yeah, I'm really, really happy for them. And I agree. Yeah, it was all done in rather a clever way. And it ramped up the atmosphere, didn't it, on Watford. It's just too many players that were signed by too many different managers in that squad. And it's just different camps, aren't they? They're just not together. And because they all got signed by different people, they probably all want out. And I think it was a really hard job for Ed Steele. Obviously, it got progressively worse. But I'm not saying it was an impossible job. But I do remember when Javi Gracia walked away, he couldn't have been happier to walk away, could he? Do you remember? He was basically saying, I don't need this aggravation. And he basically said, this group of players, I'm not sure I can achieve the target with this group of players. And I don't think he was solely talking about talent. I think he was talking about them as a group. And unfortunately, Ed Steele wasn't able to galvanise that unity either.
I just read that Scott Duxbury, the chairman's talking about changing tact and going with some more experience, battle-hardened, a la Hull City players for next season. And with the young players that they got, the talented young players, that would obviously be a sensible decision, but it's getting the right manager, isn't it? And giving him the power, I suppose, and changing that culture, which is the only way that can get any success there. Too many good individuals, not a team at all, to my money, whenever I saw them, even during their good spells, which there was, I think, during the winter time, probably some good periods.
Still at Bristol, didn't we? They won at Bristol City. We were both there. They did all right that night.
They did all right. Yeah, it was kind of a bit of a shootout, wasn't it, for who was going to stay in touching distance of the playoffs. But yeah, we'll watch this space because I'll believe it when I see it. I can't imagine there's ever going to be a time, probably in our time doing this podcast and covering them, that they're going to get their house completely in order. It's just whether they can, I suppose, get that balance right in relation to what I was just talking about. Get some players that can run the dressing room and actually get a little bit of consistency.
16th place finish for Watford. Right, that is the Championship done. We're going to head to League One next, where Stevenage got the final playoff spot, Luton and Plymouth missing out. Luton won at Bolton, Plymouth won at Northampton, coming from 2-0 down, but both will have to be happy with being contenders next season rather than extending the current campaign. Plymouth were there before Stevenage's late winner against Wigan, Dan Sweeney, in the 92nd minute. That's some call from the ref and the lino, Clarky, to give that. I'm not convinced the ball was over the line. I'm not sure many other people are either.
Well, it wasn't over the line. No chance that was actually a legitimate goal. I don't understand why they can't have goal line technology in League One, really. It can't cost that much. It just can't. I think that is what they should have, because that for me was just guesswork, and it was the wrong guess. You know, Luton must be raging with Jack Wilshere. Obviously, they would have gone in there had that goal not been given. So but I'm chuffed for Stevenage. I mean, fantastic. Lost at home just twice all season. It's been brilliant. It's the cornerstone of the team is this clean sheet mentality. 19 of them, and 13 of those have happened at home. So, you know, Stockport won't have it easy, I don't think, in that tie at all. I think Borough did beat them home and away in the regular season. So that is that for me is a 50-50 game, and I actually would make Stevenage favourites for the first leg. So yeah, no, I'm chuffed for them, but definitely a little bit fortunate on the final day to get that big decision. Maybe it's an omen. Maybe that's a sign that they're going to upset the big boys. And let's be honest, Bradford and Bolton in the other semi-final are the big boys, where the pressure is more on them to get promoted.
That's some good stuff on Stevenage, which I don't think I got out on Saturday, but 18 of their 21 wins by a one goal margin. Eight of their last 11 wins, 1-0. Just by contrast, Luton have won 7 games by 2 or more. Plymouth Argyle won 11 games by 2 or more. So it's a different way to go about things. They're obviously incredibly defensively resolute. Only the bottom three have scored fewer goals than Stevenage. So it made me think of that Huddersfield promotion season when I don't think they scored a goal, did they? And then it went all the way to penalties, if memory serves. So, yeah, they're going to be a real difficult team to come up against. Stockport, obviously, have got a few more threats. The best thing about Stockport, which I don't think mentioned on the podcast, which I wasn't overly aware of, I know that Carl Wootton played at centre-half against Wimbledon. He's played at centre-half the last 6 games. He's their 19-goal top scorer. Blimey. He is now Dave Challoner's centre-half. And I watched a few clips from him earlier. He is like Beckenbauer back there.
Did you ever do a bit back there?
I did. I was a little bit... I've probably told this story before, but before the cup final, the League Cup final in Scotland, we had a defensive injury crisis, and a few of the lads got together and said, let's tell Sammy that he's playing centre half. So like the day before, they've obviously got into me, like, Gaffer's thinking about playing you centre half, blah, blah, blah. I think one of the coaches maybe was in on it as well. It might have been the Thursday before the Saturday. I've obviously gone home on the Thursday night, sleepless night. I'm like sweaty palms, think I can't play at Hampden at centre half. And obviously I get in on the Friday and they're just winding me up. So I was very, very reluctant, very reluctant. Did it a bit during like my youth team reserve team days, but yeah, the first team, I didn't know whether to go with runners, step up. I felt like a fish out of water. But Carl Wootton is outstanding. And Dave Challoner said that he's probably prolonged his career by about 5 years by making this decision. And with Joseph Aluwu out long-term, maybe he's going to have to do it through the playoff campaign as well. So he's going to miss his goals, but probably one of the teams that can cope with that considering their attacking armoury.
So Stevenage, Stockport, Saturday, then the return on Wednesday. Bolton, Bradford, Saturday, return on Thursday. That's going to be a really fascinating tie. Has there ever been a League One playoff semi-final set where the two teams playing each, or the four teams playing each other, have the same first letter of their names? I don't know, and I'm not going to look it up. Stevenage, Stockport, Bolton, Bradford. That pleases me, if nobody else. Exeter not feeling very pleased. They lost 2-1 at home to the aforementioned Bradford. They are relegated. They won just one of their final 20 games to bring an end to their four-season spell in League One. They're already talking about drastic cuts to the budget, of course, supporter-owned, but not with particularly deep pockets. Might be a while before we see them back in the third tier by the sounds of it, Clarkie.
Yeah, I know, I read the same thing. Yeah, I think the 9 players out of contract, 6 loanees, none of them are likely to be retained. And yeah, they're short on cash. So yeah, Matt Taylor's already sort of flagged it that unless things change dramatically, don't expect a sort of table topping Exeter in League Two, because we just don't have that kind of squad available. So yeah, it's a bit sad. It is sad. It was a hard game on reflection, wasn't it? Entertaining Bradford on the final day, and they didn't really acquit themselves brilliantly. So yeah, and the only upside, and it's not an upside because you don't want to lose him, is but they will make 100% profit on Jaden Wareham, won't they? If they sell him, 19 goals. He's only 22. I think Bradford and Bolton are the front runners to maybe sign him this summer. If one of those two sides get promoted to the Championship, maybe they'll go in for Wareham, and Exeter can have a sort of financial lifeline that helps them rebuild their squad. I think that might be the only way.
Tough for your old club, Sam. I know you would have been disappointed to see them slip out. They rolled the dice on Matt Taylor, but even by the time that he'd come in, it sort of looked as though they were doomed.
Yeah, they were on a bit of a downward spiral. So, you know, it's not all to do with there being a period with a couple of interim managers and then Taylor coming in latterly. I think there's continuity there in terms of the coaches who step into the breach. I think they were even working in the academy when I was there 10 or so years ago. So yeah, really difficult. And obviously it's a club like no other really in terms of the way that it's run. So it will affect, and it will affect people at the clubs. And, you know, the majority of the players, even in my time, were on 1-year contracts, and it was a budget that had to be, you know, boxed with really cleverly with the previous manager, Paul Tisdale, as it was in my day. So yeah, really tough for them. I don't think this probably would have happened if Gary Caldwell would have remained, that said, because I think he's proven to be a pretty good gaffer at this level. But you factor in, they won 7 of the first 12 home games. It's that home form, isn't it? 1-11, you can get away with it if you're doing the business in front of your home supporters with a poor away record. But you know, that was really disappointing. And obviously Jaden Wareham has been very good, but there's been clearly an over-reliance on him. And yeah, he'll deserve his move. And I'm sure he'll go on and score goals wherever he turns up. But it's going to be all about, you know, what type of squad they can put together next season and whether Taylor wants to stay. I think he was settled kind of in Yorkshire or wherever he'd moved to, but it sounds like he'd like to take it on again, which would probably be a sensible decision at this juncture.
Okay, so they stay up. They go down. Leighton Orient stay up in their place after a 2-2 draw with Burton. Richie Wellens' post-match was spicy. I'm going to read it all out. It's worth sticking with here. He told BBC London, "I've come out a couple of times now to go out of sports in the past. I'm going to apologise for that now, and I'm going to tell you the reason why I've done it. We've got a weak group, really, really weak. And when our supporters give them criticism, I try and take the criticism off them. So I come out and say the atmosphere wasn't great, and then supporters come at me. I don't feel that my protection of them or going on the verge of ruining a relationship with the group of supporters I've got an unbelievable relationship with is worth it. Week in, week out, especially the past 6 or 7 weeks, they get served up with rubbish. There are too many players that have wasted 10 months of their career and wasted my time. I've had 1 year of my management that's been wasted by the players, and they've wasted the supporters' time. They've not given them enough days to turn up to." It's going to be interesting looking at the retained lease list when that gets released, Clarky, for Leighton Orient.
I mean, yeah, and a lot of the players are quite, well-known players and you know, players that have been knocking around for a while and, yeah, on decent money, I'm sure. And look, if they didn't have Don Ballard's 23 goals, they would have definitely gone down, wouldn't they? So, yeah, it's refreshing to hear a manager sort of lambast a team. I don't mind it at all, especially if you are going to have an absolute cull, which is fair enough. But also, it's a bit of a deflection tactic, isn't it? Because, you know, some of it's on him. Only three teams conceded more goals. And I always think conceding goals or defensive solidity, a lot of that is on the manager and what you do in training and how you organise the team and the personnel that you've got. And, you know, for only, you know, three teams to concede more than Orient isn't good on him. They're also letting 24 set-piece goals, the most of any team in League One. One of the simplest things to fix on the training ground is defending set-pieces properly. So, you know, yeah, you can pointing the finger at individuals who have made mistakes, but you know, he's not had a great season himself.
I wanted to leave the last word on League One to you, Sam, specifically Billy Sharp. He got a hat-trick on his final appearance for Doncaster Rovers. It came in their 3-1 win at Peterborough. It means, and this is incredible, that he scored Football League hat-tricks in his teens, his 20s, his 30s and his 40s. I mean, just a word, basically, on the remarkable career of Billy Sharp, because I don't think anybody will ever equal that statistic.
That phenomenal, yeah. I mean, he's the first person I would go to when you're talking about top championship strikers, I think, since the rebrand or whatever. He's top three, isn't he? Longevity, goals, be right up there in terms of goals. I would imagine he's the top scorer, isn't he, in the championship, maybe, in history. Do you know what? Just thinking there, he didn't have it easy to the early part of his career, because I remember when he broke through at Sheffield United, did he not? And then got released and was off at Scunthorpe. And it wasn't an easy path. It was there where he started scoring freely. And then to get all the way to the Premier League and probably have to adapt your game a little bit, become a bit more of a team player, obviously improve in certain areas. It can't just all be about being a predator when you get to the top of the Championship and the Premier League. That's why he deserves enormous credit, I think, because it's that longevity. It would have been easy for him to maybe have been cast aside around that period and it just to peter out for him, but he's come back and he's contributed to every lower league club that he's landed at since. So incredible appetite for the game, brilliant goal scorer, movement, awareness, probably knowing where to be, and a good character as well to add. Yeah, really good character. Not shy of getting into the odd tete-a-tete with supporters and opposition players. So, yeah, tough character. And, we'll miss him, won't we, in the EFL? We'll miss him. Is he going to play on or is that it?
Oh, he'll be back somewhere, I reckon. He is top of the list, by the way, Sam, according to Transfermarkt.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
All-time top championship goal scorer. This top five is lovely, by the way. Billy Sharp on 130, Jordan Rhodes, 123, David Nugent, 121, Ross McCormack, 120, Chris Martin, 114. You'll never get number nine, Clarkey, according to Transfermarkt, most goals in the championship.
Go on.
Tom Ince.
No. Really?
Apparently so, yeah.
I'd have been here all day, rattling enough names. Dave Nugent, been coaching my daughter Evie at Leicester City in the girls' academy. He's own daughter's in the system himself. But yeah, he's really good. He's a really lovely fella, actually.
He was class for a couple of years in the championship on the shoulder. Preston team used to absolutely destroy whatever team I was in.
Yeah, I really like him. Just a quick one on the weekend, right? He got a fourth, didn't he? Okay, that was disallowed. I don't know if you saw it. And it would have been his 300th career goal. Well, and it was flagged for offside. And I've paused it. I'm telling you, he was not offside. So absolutely robbed there. Stays on 299.
He's got to keep playing then, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, he's not moving anywhere, is he? So where could he conceivably go? We're looking, what, League 2, League 1? Yeah, I mean, we've done that a few times on the podcast. There's 27 Yorkshire teams in League One, isn't there? So,
York City?
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
That's the story.
Oh,
I was going to say Harrogate, but obviously can't go there and stay in the EFL. Maybe Chesterfield's not too far.
York City, the National League lads coming up, someone to book the nights out and the day at the races and all that. Someone with a bit of clout and a few quid. Perfect.
We shall see. All right, let's get to League Two. Bromley won the title. They beat Walsall 3-1 to secure it. I think we can all agree that that's the best outcome, all those of us who didn't bet on MK Dons to win it.
Yeah, because shut up, that's out of order. Do you know what? I bet on MK Dons to win it, and I also bet ahead of the World Snooker Championship on Sean Murphy to win it at 20-1, and he gets beat 18-17 in the final. Absolutely brutal weekend for me. I don't have many bets, I've got to be honest, but you know, I fancied those two to land. Neither did. So
I did a whole card for my other half. We took the boys to family day at Kempton yesterday, so me and the boys had a little look yesterday morning, picked out some colours and some names. 1-0. And she turned up with the old A4 pad. Don't worry, everyone. You know, a few other families. Don't worry. Sam's done it all. He's had a look at the form and all that. Didn't win a pound.
Well, better news for you, Clarkie, at least, is that one of your 14 boyhood clubs took the final automatic promotion place in League Two, Cambridge, a 0-0 draw at Crewe. Really loved it. We always get these, don't we, these days. But the post-match talk from Neil Harris that they put on social media, and Mark Bonner got involved in that as well. And Neil Harris, Sam, you know him. He just strikes me as one of those people who you like to play for. Did they? Obviously, they did. But do you feel that they're well worthy of Pippin, Notts County and Salford? I mean, all three of them failed to win on the final day, didn't they? But how impressed have you been with them over the season?
Yeah, no, really impressed. Yeah, no, I think they do deserve it. I genuinely do. And I'll tell you why. Because they're much harder to beat than the other two. Salford lost 15 games in the league this season. Notts County lost 14 games. Cambridge lost 8. You know, so those draws, even though a lot of those draws, you know, could have been defeats, they've salvaged stuff that they've helped to get them over the line. So yeah, less wins than those other two teams, but they're hard to beat. And they basically had the best defence in the league, certainly the best defensive record, 20 clean sheets. That was their 20th at Crewe, and they gave up very little in that game. I think the XG from the Railway Men was next to nothing. So yeah, no, I think they deserve it. They were in League One for quite a few years, weren't they? Punching, and it would have been disappointing to go down. So I think that the fact that they've returned so quickly is a real lift to the Hughes fans. It's not a big footballing city, Cambridge. I come from a town not far away from there. It's never going to have a huge backing, but they've got the right kind of people in charge there, in Harris and Bonner, and behind the scenes. So yeah, wish them well.
Playoff wise then, Notts County and Salford having to make do with that. It's Grimsby against Salford Sunday and then Friday for that. Sam, I'm sorry that Swindon missed out on the final day. Chesterfield beating them in that, what essentially was a playoff for the final place. You'll be hugely disappointed about that, I'm sure. But, I know that you're covering this one, Chesterfield v Notts County is a very meaty playoff tie. Those two do not like each other very much.
Yeah, I thought that as soon as it kind of was revealed on Saturday evening that those two were going to be playing each other. I think it'll be a brilliant football match, actually, between two excellent teams. I mean, there's no comparison going into that final game that Chesterfield were in a much better place than Swindon. And I would think, and having spoken to a few people of a Swindon Town persuasion, that the damage has kind of set in long before the last couple of games, certainly after the Grimsby defeat when they were making their way home. And it's how it played out. It could have been a draw. I think Ollie Palmer was thwarted by the goalkeeper on two or three occasions in the same action, really, at the weekend. But yeah, I think Chesterfield will be, yeah, will be a dangerous opponent. I think it's really in the balance, this one. It feels quite goaly. I think Notts County against Chesterfield. I think a bonus up front for Chesterfield and obviously Notts County. I know they've not been completely on song throughout, but with Jatta and Dennis and Joan, Jatta's had a pretty good season again. I just feel that they can hurt you at any occasion. So, yeah, it looks like a really good game. Salford, their strong suit, flipping to the other tie, it's been defensively latterly. I think Grimsby, again, really good attacking side. I've liked them since the outset of the season. They had a dip, but they've come back with real vigour towards the tail end. And with Cabia and Andy Cook, who I'm sure is good for a goal in playoff campaigns of seasons past, I think that game's a little bit easier to read. I think it'll be tight. I think Salford's clean sheets that have been racking up towards the tail end of the season may keep that one very in the balance. Notts and Chesterfield, that could be topsy-turvy all the way.
Mm, yeah, looking forward to those. Relegation-wise then, it ended up being Barrow and Harrogate who go down. Barrow finishing bottom after the loss 2-1 at home to Newport, a result which spared County an exile from the EFL. Really enjoyed this statement from Barrow's owners, Clarkey, which simply began, "To all fellow Bluebirds, what an awful season. The only words we can say to you all is how sorry we are." So some culpability there, but if you have five different coaches over the course of the season, this is more than likely going to happen. Four, you can get away with. You might even win the Europa League, but five is too many.
Yeah, I knew exactly where you were going there. What a season that's going to be for Forest, potentially. Unreal. But yeah, no, Barrow, it just hasn't happened for them. And look, with Barrow and Harrogate, two clubs that aren't sort of EFL stalwarts, so to speak, you know, smallish clubs, smallish fan bases, they'll just have to dust themselves down. I don't think it'd be a catastrophe for either. I think they can sort of regroup in the National League and maybe come back up in the next 2 or 3 years. But yeah, it's in the here and now, it will hurt, won't it? Yeah, Barrow need to get themselves a manager. Harrogate, obviously, I would imagine Simon Weaver will stick with them. They've got to find themselves a goal scorer, haven't they? I mean, it was just couldn't score goals. I think on that last day as well, they had loads of chances. They played pretty well against Barnet, but spurned opportunities. Jack Muldoon and, is it Stephen Duke McKenna, top scorers this season for Harrogate, 5 apiece. I mean, any top scorer shouldn't be getting 5, really. You're going to be in trouble, aren't you? So yeah, no, I feel for them, but yeah, they'll be absolutely fine, I'm sure.
So first relegation, Harrogate have suffered under Simon Weaver. He's been in charge since 2009, that 20-game winless run between October and Jan. The killer for them, they lost to Barnet, coupled with Crawley's draw against Salford. That was enough for them. We should have a word, Sam, for Christian Fuchs and Colin Kazim-Richards. Mentioned it last week, the two unlikely saviours of respective League Two teams this season. And Newport particularly looked in real trouble, didn't they, when Fuchs came in? I'm sure he didn't know much about League Two at that time, but got to credit him and Kazim Richards and the people who appointed them, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I caught a fair chunk of Crawley against Salford. I think it was all immaterial towards the tail end. Even a goal if Salford had scored would have meant that, you know, Crawley's position wouldn't have altered. They were already safe. But yeah, they threw absolutely everything at them. Salford, the kitchen sink. They should have had a penalty. Dan Udo got wiped out. It was awful decision. He went on to miss an open goal, more or less, so they could have quite conceivably have lost that game. But yeah, credit. And I saw a couple of interviews, one by Colin Kazim-Richards saying that he'd had like a bit of a mole in the camp, releasing team news. There's been a bomb squad I wasn't totally aware of. Maybe I don't want to guess here, but I think, you know, obviously Scott Lindsay had accumulated a lot of those players that he'd had previously, so I think maybe he's left one or two out. Harry McCurdy's interview was box office, as you would imagine, talking about how every bomb squad at any team he's ever been at, he's normally in it. So thankful that he wasn't, but he commended kind of the attitude of those other players. But it feels like there's been a bit going on off the pitch as well. So yeah, he deserves credit for that initial bounce. I think it was 8 points from the first 4 games. Weren't able to sustain it, but did enough across the period to remain in the division. So look forward to seeing what what he can do next season. And absolutely with Christian Fuchs, because we would have rubbished that appointment to a degree on this podcast. I saw them get thumped at Boreham Wood in the FA Cup. And at that point, the fans are on him. It looked like it was a terrible decision. But yeah, considering the budget at play there, the amount of players that lack experience in the league, the age of the squad, he's done a miraculous job. And Bobby Kamwa, I haven't got the numbers in front of me, but I think he scored 4 vital goals across the last half dozen games or whatever to garner points. So yeah, when they needed a talisman, the old tricky winger popped up with some wonder goals for salvation.
Can't beat a tricky winger. You can't. Fuchs has been linked with Leicester's job, hasn't he?
I told you that, and you said no. I said, I bet he takes the Leicester job, and you said no chance.
I don't think so. He's 16 to 1, so he's quite a long shot. But I just had a little look at those odds. I know it's going back to the Championship, but guess who the favourite is for the Leicester job? If you know, next manager after Gary Rower, Darren Ferguson. Odds on. I don't see that.
Yeah.
I don't see that. The one I see, if they can afford him, is Chris Davis. He's the second favourite. And I suspect Birmingham might let him go. And Chris Davis was number 2 for years under Brendan Rodgers there. I know he really likes Leicester as a club. So, and obviously he did brilliantly in League One before. So yeah, watch this space. Going to be interesting times there. But I think, yeah, Fuchs clearly has got something about him. But I think it's a bit too much of a jump for Leicester in their current predicament to go with someone inexperienced like that. And he did only get just over a point a game. I think 32 points in 30 games. Good. But it's not sort of blow your socks off good.
Where are Neil Lennon and Martin O'Neill in the odds?
Well, Martin O'Neill's quite busy at the moment. Actually, Neil Lennon, isn't he in the...
Dunfermline in the cup final.
Didn't they win the cup or they've gone
in the
cup
final? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll read the odds. Ferguson's odds on favour, then Chris Davis, then Russell Martin, Solskjaer, Dick Schroeder. Don't know who that is. Christian Fuchs. And then you're getting into the Scott Parker, Sean Dyche territory, which is now... Yeah.
Dick Schroeder sounds nasty. Well done to Christian. He's made us look Fuchs and silly all season, etc. and so on. Speaking of which, our predictions have done that at times to us as well. Last week, 1 point for Adrian and I, 2 for Sam. So nobody particularly shining there. Let's go playoffs then this week and see if we can do any better. Sam, I'm going to give you first crack at Hull v Millwall, since you're such a Hull apologist.
Oh man, like people coming for me over the weekend because I had the cheek to suggest that Derby may nick the final playoff spot. So because of that, I'm not allowed to compliment Hull on the job well done. I'm not allowed to say that, you know, the manager's been good this season. Like, how dare you? You're terrible at punditry, so on and so forth. I think that this could very well be penalties at the Den. So with that in mind, I'm going to go... I'm just gonna crumble. I'm gonna go 1-0 home win and maybe Mill to reverse it in London.
1-1 for me. What do you reckon, Clarkie?
Yeah, well, 1-1 is what I reckon. I've seen them both recently at Leicester. Neither were brilliant, if I'm honest.
You got to go for the scabby 1-0 away, ain't you? Or the 0-0.
Okay, nil.
That's all that's at play.
All nil.
Thriller. I was looking forward to watching that as well. Stevenage Stockport, what do you reckon, Adrian?
Stevenage to win. Great home record. Buzzing after the goal that probably shouldn't have been given. I think they're going to... But Stockport almost always score. Away from home, they've been banging them in. Stevenage 2, Stockport 1.
Sam's going to say, don't mind it.
I'm going to flip it, you know. I mean... One of us has got to go for the 1-0 Stevenage home win after what I said. I'm going to go for Stockport to win 2-1. I don't know why. I fancy Stockport here, I think. I just think that looks so emotive at Stevenage. It's been a lot doing the rounds, like, and he's really nice geezer, Alex Revell, when I've spoken to him at games this season. Seems like a top guy. Premier League experience, playoff experience as well. Scored the absolute worldie, didn't he? So he's shown he's got what it takes as a player. I just think Stockport might have too much threat. 2-1.
Okay. So you've gone 2-1 to Stockport. Adrian's gone 2-1 to Stevenage. I'll go 2-2. Why not? Chesterfield Notts. I'm going to say 2-2 for that as well. I think there'll be lots of goals in that particular tie. What do you reckon, Sam?
I will go for Chesterfield just to edge it in the home tie. Yeah, 2-1, Chesterfield.
Clarkie?
3-1 to Chesterfield.
Wow, okay. We'll let you know how we get on with that next week. Before we go, let me remind you again of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least 1 bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on risk. Responsible gambling. Let's finish as we always do with the tweet of the week. This is a new one because it comes from a first team coach and head of academy coaching, specifically Paddy Byrne of Chesterfield. And he is quote tweeting the club account saying, "See you in the Skybet League 2 playoffs." He says, "Some noise, brackets, and costumes," close brackets, in that away end. "Lads, superb. Enjoy your bank holiday weekend. See you Sunday. Hashtag Spyrites." Blue heart emoji, football emoji. Good to see, Sam, that there's so little difference between what a player would post and what a coach would post. Like the inclusion of costumes, you will too after your weekend. But yeah, pretty run of the mill.
Yeah, if he's going to X and he's in, he's at position of the first team, he's got to produce. He's got to lead by example. He's got to show the lads that they can be more creative. He's not done that here. Again, perfect example as to why we started this little feature. And the players get criticised. I'm afraid the coaching staff have got to take it as well. Poor, very poor. I look forward to seeing him in 10 days' time. Can't wait.
Just a couple of replies to it, Clark. I mean, he's not a prolific tweeter, certainly not to any great extent. He did wish people a happy St. Patrick's Day back on the 17th of March. But yeah, it's one of those, isn't it? You're not going to learn much about Paddy and his view on the world from his Twitter page.
No. I mean, enjoy your bank holiday weekend. He sounds like a nice fella. You know, he's thinking of others, isn't he? You know, praising the costumes in the away end. Yeah, he seems like a considerate guy, but yeah, you got to offer a little bit more. If you're going to take to the keyboard, you know, give us a little bit of insight, Paddy. Come on, do better.
Yeah, not great. Okay, hopefully you thought the show was great, though. We should be back with another one next week, but that's where we'll leave things for today. Thanks to Sam, to Adrian. Thanks to you for listening as well. For now, it's goodbye.